This week, Phoenix City would like to acknowledge the passing of club legend Russell Gray. Rest in peace, Rusty.
Phoenix City!
Welcome to Phoenix City for another week. Just Dave out of the regulars here tonight.
Hello, how are we going?
Very good. Cameron Frosty both away, but we're joined instead by two guests from the one in Phoenix. We've got Paul Temple, who's Academy Director and Interim Assistant Coach of the first team. How you doing, Paul?
Hey, everyone.
And we've got Steve Coleman, who is stand-in Academy Director in the time that Paul has vacated it. And you're also running the National League team as well.
Yeah, that's correct. Hi, guys. How you going?
Very good. Thanks to both of you for joining us. We may as well jump straight into the Phoenix game from last week, which was on Friday night against Adelaide United, and ended with a 3-1 loss. Full disclosure, I haven't seen this game. I was busy all over the weekend and all this week. Have seen a few key moments from it, though, but obviously a bit disappointing after the positive results from the last two rounds. Paul, would that kind of sum up what you and the rest of the coaching team's feelings were coming out of this?
Yeah, obviously any game you lose, you're going to be disappointed, but probably the performances weren't at the level that they have been the previous 2 weeks, so that was probably the most disappointing thing. You know, a few factors in that. Playing away from home is difficult. All Whites returning straight from Spain met us in Adelaide, so preparations on the training pitch back here in Wellington were difficult with so many players away, obviously. A lot of travel for the likes of Roy coming all the way back, and all the way back to New Zealand, then all the way back out to Adelaide. So I'm not sure he knows what time zone he's still in. But yeah, all those things contributed. And I think at the end of the day, Adelaide are a really good side on top form at the moment. And not a great time to play them at their place. Cooper's was bouncing, so it was a difficult night. But we didn't quite get the energy and the performance that we had in the previous two games.
Yeah, I think from the outside, it was one of those ones where it felt worse because we'd had a couple really good weeks there. If we'd moved this, you know, a month or two into the past, I would have felt like it was probably quite a decent performance. But on the back of two quite good performances, it felt like a little bit of a slump. But it's still a long way ahead of where we were a little while ago. And there was definitely some positives in there. But it, I mean, yeah, we obviously had that chance, penalty shout, and then Roy hitting the post as well. You know, if that had gone in, maybe the whole complexion of the game is quite different. But obviously it didn't, and very quickly we were behind by a couple of goals, and from there it felt like it was going to be consolation at best, which is exactly how it ended up with that penalty at the end. So
yeah, I mean, let's talk about that penalty shout at the start. Dave and I might do more of the talking here, but I have seen this, and I have no idea how this is not a penalty.
Yeah, see, so. I wanted to ask you about this because obviously you're a referee, and sometimes our opinions differ on some of these. But for mine, that's a dead set penalty. I think some people on Twitter were making an argument that, you know, he's lost control of the ball and stuff like that. I just don't see that there. I think if he places that foot the way he should rather than having it hooked, he's still going to be controlling that ball and he's still shooting.
Yeah.
I just don't see it as him having lost control completely, and therefore there's no penalty shot here. He gets brought down, dead set pen for mine. I do not understand how in a VAR error we're not giving that as a pen.
That's the thing, is that could be hard to see on the pitch. Has he thrown himself to ground, like all those things? And given that Roy got a shot away straight away, I mean, I think it's right that if you were going to give a penalty, play the advantage first. The last thing you want is for that to go in from Roy, have to take a penalty and it gets saved. But how the VAR is not having words.
Do you think that's what sways the VAR here? As he goes, oh, well, you got a shot away anyway and probably should have scored it? Is that where this comes down to? Or?
I have no idea. I have no idea what goes through the VAR's head when he sees this, because we don't get told any of this stuff.
No.
All that we get told is the VAR looked at it and agreed with what, or didn't see enough evidence to overturn it. Not necessarily agree with what the on-field decision was, but was it hard for the players to compose themselves after a seemingly clear-cut decision like that on the park?
Yeah, well, I think the opening 2 minutes we created two good chances. Andre actually had a chance at the back post around about the same time. I think it was just before. And then we had the penalty appeal and Roy following up and hitting the post. So we actually started the game incredibly well. And I think the players were in good spirits and we were off to a good start. So I think if we get a penalty or we score and we go up early, then it obviously changes the complexion of how you approach the game and what they do, because they were dropping off, which we hadn't experienced before. And trying to make it difficult for us to play through the midfield area. So if we had a one goal lead, it would have had to have changed their dynamic a little bit too. So it's quite a significant moment and unfortunately didn't go our way.
Yeah. One player that I've heard about having a busy day was Ollie Sale, who, despite the scoreline, had a probably fantastic game, you'd have to describe it as. Mm.
Is that how you describe it? Do you remember seeing his face?
As you can tell, I'm struggling for words because I haven't seen it. But
no, I thought he was excellent. I think he, on some of those Facebook groups, ended up as their player of the day as well. I think it was well-deserved. I mean, even though he obviously shipped a few goals, he made a hell of a lot of saves and was one of the best on the park, which, given he's kind of been thrown in there covering for injury and that sort of stuff, he's doing very well and looks the business, so can't fault him for that. He's been given a chance and he's taking it.
I'll throw it at you here, Steve, because we've talked to Paul a lot, but I think it's the essence of this season.
Shush, Paul.
But no, not like that. But one of the best things about this season, despite the results and everything, is that we've got young players coming through. And three or four young players who are making a name for themselves in this league. Obviously, Sarpreet's the big one, but Logan as well recently. What's the word for it? Is it heartwarming that you can see all the work that's been put in for the last two or three years at academy level and at reserves level with these players coming through the first team?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's certainly a crop of young boys coming through now in those age groups that have the potential to make a mark on that first team. And I think certainly in the last 4 or 5 weeks with Greeny and Paul in charge, I think that we've seen a bit of a change with those young boys getting opportunities. You know, Logan played last week. I thought he was fantastic against Brisbane. And Ollie's been really good, certainly from a National League perspective. His performances in the last month or so have warranted his selection in the side. So, yeah, there's obviously the performances of Libby that everyone talks about. Libby's done fantastic and he gets better each game that we see him play. But then we had two or three boys come in and sat on the bench in the Newcastle game, the Brisbane game.
Brisbane game
that were also ready to step up. You know, Willem and Sam Phillip there. So I think the work that's gone in certainly before my time with Paul and Andy Hedge has come into fruition now for sure.
There was a period when the international windows were on, the Phoenix had to sign players just to cover the absences on the bench. I remember there was a game against Sydney where we signed Sean Lovemore and Aaron Clapham for a game, but that's just not even on the cards anymore because we have these young players that are coming through. Is it great to be able to show the young players that there is actually a pathway to professional football in Wellington?
Yeah, I think it certainly validates what the academy is trying to achieve with the obviously, as I say, Libby's the standout from the season, really. Keegan, in the early season, got opportunities as well, and it does show the boys in the academy that there is a way out for them and there is opportunities if the time is right for them. So, yeah, I think it certainly validates what Paul set in motion and what Andy had done before him. So the opportunities are there as long as they work hard enough to take them.
Obviously, Logan won the penalty at the end, and as you want any good striker to do is to say, I'm taking this. As it kind of... I don't want to stitch him up, but is it nervous seeing a young player saying, I'm going to take this ahead of your more senior experienced strikers as a coach?
Look, I don't think Logan's known for his penalty taking. I haven't seen him taken many. Sarpreet usually takes them in the reserves for the last few years. He did take one in the under-17s in the qualifiers in Tahiti, which he scored. So, look, the biggest... Well, the most pleasing thing for us sitting on the bench was that he's that confident that he picked the ball up and said, I want to take it. And when you've got someone with that much confidence and willingness to take it, then you're going to back them. And I think that's a sign of where he's come from in the last month, really. Like, you know, he wasn't anywhere near the first team throughout the season. Then now he's taking the ball for penalties and putting it down and putting them away. So credit to him. You know, young players, they need to be confident. And so good on him for stepping up and doing it.
I'm going to play devil's advocate on this one, slightly. And then I think it's really good to see strikers with that level of confidence to step up and take it, especially a young guy, you know, keen to do it. But it's always tough as a fan, particularly with a player who has a small reputation for being a bit arrogant and selfish at times, to see him waving away more senior players and going, no, this is mine, and, you know, holding on to the ball. And, you know, he scored it, but if he had missed that, I think he would have copped a lot of grief from fans, because he has that reputation and it looks that way a little bit from the vision. And if he'd missed it completely, you might have seen him cop something. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's fair, because I think it's more a confidence thing.
This exact thing happened at the same end at Adelaide late in the game with Tyler Boyd.
Correct.
He won a penalty, he stepped up and it was saved. And there wasn't that much hatred and quotations thrown on him. It was,
you obviously didn't read the forums after that one.
Oh, no, I don't read the forums generally, but yes. Obviously, 3-1 loss. Is there anything that you can take from a game like this and build on during the week ahead of a tough game against the Victory? Is there like one little thing that you can say, we did well here, let's work on that?
Yeah, I think there's lots of things we can take out of it tactically, especially from a combination point of view. We altered some of the combinations that we'd had from the previous week, obviously All Whites being away, and then them coming back in. So there were some selection headaches, which was good to have. So we've got that to think about, obviously, going into this next game. And tactically, as I sort of mentioned before, Adelaide did something different to what we've experienced in the last three games, which was kind of sit in a bit of a medium block, and we had to try and break them down. And so we got a lot of ball in terms of building out from the back, which we hadn't been doing as much in the previous two games. So obviously things to work on there, and a little bit more work going back into breaking down the defensive structure and trying to get in behind teams that sit a little bit deeper. So we've definitely picked up some things tactically we can improve on.
Hopefully. we'll go around the rest around the games before we move on to the weekend's game against the Victory. Sydney FC wrapped up the title, or the premiership at least, with a 3-2 win over Perth Glory over in Perth on Thursday night. Brisbane snuck a 1-0 win past the Mariners, who got the goal there. Henrique got the goal for them. Melbourne Victory got a 3-1 win over the Western Sydney Wanderers, and Costa got himself sent off on VAR.
He did.
Which was interesting. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have. It was so a penalty was given, and I think it was Thwaite.
Yeah.
Committed the foul and was sent off for a second yellow card. But while everyone's, you know, at the top of the box and the penalty's about to be taken, Costa steps across and intentionally stands on a defender's foot, which is the sort of thing at club grade, particularly social grades, you see a lot on every corner, every penalty, bloody everything.
Yeah.
But when there's that many cameras on you and a VAR watching, such a deliberate motion, and caught on camera, it's the right card to send him off. I mean, you can do him for violent conduct there, and you can send him, and they did. And there's a lot of confusion on the commentary where they're going, oh, if they overturned the penalty here and all this stuff. And then when they saw the vision, they went, oh, actually, it's fair enough.
Yeah.
Silly from him. Sort of thing, like I say, you see got away with every game.
These are the things that we thought level, yeah, these are things that we thought VAR would stamp out, like shirt pulling at free kicks and everything, and we just haven't seen it yet.
No.
But it's good to see it now. Everyone's going to think twice about doing something stupid like that this weekend.
The interesting thing is he's only copped a one game suspension.
It's a standard for violence.
The standard for violent conduct is actually two games.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And so he's received less than that. So I'm not sure the offence they actually put through was.
It could be a lesser grade of violent conduct, because it's a bit different to punching somebody, right?
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Leroy George and I changed the page on my phone, which I shouldn't have done. Leroy George got a goal early. Wanderers equalised before the half, and then actually another penalty before the half. Barisha and then Thomas Ding ran out the 3-1, and then the Jets faltered again. Late season jitters for them. They went down 3-0 with Melbourne City. Dario Vidicic getting a couple of goals there. I miss him.
Yeah, I mean,
it was fine when he wasn't doing much, but now that he's scoring two great goals in the game.
I saw a few people commenting, oh, he's banging in the goals now. I was like, he was banging them in for us too.
Yeah.
We just don't have him anymore.
Totally. All right, this weekend we play the Melbourne Victory away at Amy Park, 7 p.m. on Sunday, New Zealand time. Do we approach this game the same way we've approached the last few, which is just let's go out there and put in a good performance and try and get a win, or is it another chance to maybe see who's going to stick around with the contract for next season? Or
Look, I think we're definitely going to go into it in a positive mind state, you know, in terms of our recent record against them is pretty good.
Yep.
And we do seem to do well against the Victory. So, yeah, look, we're going to go there and give it the best shot we can. A lot of people have said, you know, we've got not too much to lose. So everyone's still in that mindset. And I think we've still got enough confidence, despite the loss last week from the previous performances, that we'd go there with head held high and, you know, try and do what we can do and I think it's probably a bit of a saving grace for us that the Victory are on good form and in that kind of playoff space, and it might be an opportunity for us to catch them off guard. So yeah, and with Costa being out, I think that helps us.
That's a good point. I hadn't put two of them together and realised that, but yeah.
Yeah, the one or two game suspension really does matter for us. One's enough. So.
Yeah. Is it? And it must be helpful having the squad together for a full week leading in before it. But does that mean you can actually put more of the good tactical things that have happened in the past few weeks into practice and training and move the team forward like that, rather than trying to scramble everyone together at the last minute?
Yeah,
like last week.
Yeah, it just gives us so much more time to prepare properly. We've started obviously this week. We have a day off tomorrow, and then we've still got two more trainings before the game and before we fly. So it gives us good opportunity to go through a variety of different things defensively and from an attacking sense. So the more preparation, the better. And I think it's also a bit more of a settled week because it's weekend to weekend. We had the Friday game and then short turnaround. So it made it really difficult last week, all those things. So a bit longer to prepare has helped us.
Yeah. Do you have much involvement with the first team at all, Steve?
Certainly much more than I had done previously in my time here.
Yeah.
You know, I think the guys are fantastic with an open door policy. So Grinny's been fantastic since he's taken over, and very accommodating as he was while he was with the academy, really. So I wouldn't say I have a massive amount to do, but if I'm asked to help out, Grinny likes to have a few eyes looking at things. So I certainly get asked the odd question from time to time, and obviously been involved with the reserve team before the end of the season. Gave me that window into the team as well. So yeah, it's certainly a lot more open than it was previously, for sure.
Completely different regime, right?
Yeah, of course, and I think that's par for the course in any environment. You know, when people leave and new people come in, people have their own stamp on things, and I think Grinny's, as you know, very accommodating and very open to all that kind of stuff, and you know, just a good guy. So yeah, for sure, definitely open with that.
Do you reckon we could do it this weekend, Dave?
Yeah, I think we can, for sure. I think it's an interesting period in terms of, I think there's a lot of guys in there who really want to show their wares and, you know, play for a new contract and play for you know, upping their stocks for wherever they might end up next season. But it's also, you don't have that new coach appointed yet, so you're not necessarily in front of the eyes you necessarily want to be. But I think there's still a lot of guys in that squad who believe in the club and want to, you know, show the best they can in these remaining games. There might not be a lot on the line in terms of playoffs or anything like that, but that doesn't mean they don't want to win every week. So I think it's every chance we go out there and we do bloody well, catch them off guard.
I think
and
we will.
Costa's a big loss for them as well. So.
Yeah, I think we're going to do this 2-1. I'm going to go out there with a prediction of 2-1. Dave, you want to make a prediction?
I'm going to say we get a draw out of this. Yeah? I'm going to say 1-1 draw.
I'll ask the other two of you for a prediction, but I guess you know who's going to...
I'll say 5-0.
Perfect. I'll take that. I'll happily take that.
Who to?
Definitely us. Definitely. Yep. We're due a clean sheet. I think we should try and get one of those.
Steve, chuck a number out.
I think the performances the boys put in the last 3 weeks would lead towards a win, hopefully. 3-1 Phoenix.
I'll take it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right, the rest of the games this round, there's no Friday night game. There is, I just have to scroll up. It's Newcastle versus Perth Glory, 9:50 p.m. I'd love to see the Jets carry some form into the playoffs and go hard there. So
Jets 2-1.
Jets 2-1, yeah. I reckon Jets will win that. Perth aren't that great this season, so... Melbourne City.
It's Rich coming from us.
Yeah, I realise I said it. Melbourne City take on the Mariners. Melbourne City surely win that. The Wanderers are playing Brisbane. That could be quite a good game, actually.
Yeah.
Probably going around. Or Sydney FC versus Adelaide, maybe. That's Sunday at 9 p.m. It's a few good games there. Well, that's kind of hard to get excited about the playoffs when you're not involved.
It is.
If we're in the mix, then I'd be worried about every single game, what it would do. But yeah. Let's have a bit of a chat to the two of you about obviously the stuff that we've touched on previously, the changes at the club. What that's meant for your roles and that kind of thing. So obviously, Paul, you've moved from being purely reserve team and academy to having involvement with the first team, to a greater extent. How's that changed a day in the life of Paul Temple at the one in Phoenix? Has it been a big change or just the same thing with a different team?
Yeah, I haven't seen my kids as much as I'd probably like to. A lot busier. The main change is that we're training in the mornings now with the first team, and then there's a lot to debrief, a lot to discuss, and before you know it, it's 3 o'clock and the academy training starts in half an hour. So it's a challenge to try and kind of combine the two and make sure that me and Steve are still communicating well. But the best thing about it is we've just got really good people Greeny's fantastic to work with, and because we've been working with each other for a year or so directly, and we know each other well from beforehand, that relationship helps a lot to get things done quicker, and we think along the same lines, so that works well. And then having Steve has been amazing for us as well, because now we've got like quality coaches, so that if one of us departs the academy space for a session or a game or something, we've got people that can step in and do the right job. And that's the whole point of getting good coaches into the academy, so if this situation happened or one of us was sick or unavailable, then we'd have the right people that could fill in, and we wouldn't be scratching around. So it's worked really well. We've increased our hours dramatically, haven't seen our family as much, but in terms of the professional side of things, it's worked really good, and we're all getting along still, and we're all still smiling and having a laugh, so it can't be that bad. Yeah.
What's the change been like for you, Steve? Obviously stepping into some shoes that have been filled by Paul and others for the last kind of two or three seasons and running that reserve team. What's that been like?
I think it's been a challenge for sure. There's no doubt about that. You know, you go from being in charge of the development phase with the younger boys and making sure that they're off and running for a good year, and then all of a sudden, you know, things change and you're on national TV setting up a team to play against Auckland City, and you know, the TV cameras are there. So things have changed and moved pretty quickly. But as Paul said, the hours increase and the workload, you know, potentially doubles. But yeah, it's great having the guys around to support that, and you know, I speak to the pair of them probably more than I did previously. So life changes and life's difficult at times, but you just roll with it and do the right thing by the boys, more importantly than your own needs, really, at the end of the day.
Is it potentially easier to jump into a role where you have to be on national TV on the weekends games without any preparation for it, without any 6-week pre-season that you have to prepare for? Is he just jumping straight in? I guess you can't really compare at the moment, can you?
I think it would have been easy against anyone other than Auckland City.
That's a fair point.
I think I'll be honest, I was a little bit tentative around the outcome of the game, knowing that they had a game to win to secure the minor premiership. It was obviously a bit of an issue, and obviously that weekend there were shortages in the first team that caused our team a problem, and I thought under the circumstances the boys were fantastic.
We saw that game in the, we weren't actually at the ground, but we were in the bar across the
some of us were.
You were there, of course. You were
very good.
But I saw it on TV, and I thought that Auckland would do it much easier given all the unrest around the club and the squad, but they got two jammy, for want of a better word, goals, and that was the game, and it felt like that team that had played together all season were working as a unit, even with some players missing, and putting a solid performance against the best team in the league now, which was great to see.
Yeah, for sure, and I think that weekend especially, we were pretty stretched across the board. We made a commitment to go to the Auckland City tournament, the under-17 boys, which obviously had an impact on the reserve team, and then I think Dura failed a fitness test in the morning of the game, and situation where, you know, we had to change the team with an hour and a half to go until kickoff. So under the circumstances, guys like Owen Smith coming in and making his full National League debut that day from the start, and you know, fantastic performance from a young lad who playing against the best midfield in the country and still wanted the ball into the 90th minute and goes down with cramp and gets up and runs it off and carries on, and it's just a testament to those boys and how well they do at that level for such a young side. So it was interesting. The following week, obviously they went to Eastern Suburbs and won, I think, 4-0 today in the semi-final, and then obviously the final of the weekend was a close one as well. So yeah, really proud of the way they performed on the day under difficult circumstances, to be honest.
Is it kind of hard, Paul, taking a step back from a team you've worked with all season and having to focus on a different side? Obviously, it's tough. But
yeah, in your role, you know, with the academy, you get attached to all of the teams. Mm-hmm. It is difficult, and you obviously want to help more. But I think the best thing about it for me watching in was the work that's been done kind of previous to this, probably starting 2 years ago, in terms of like just the philosophy in which the academy plays. So every team's playing the same way. The training's now got a consistency of delivery around what we're working on, why we're doing it, and the methodology's consistent, and the coaches are all using the same language on the pitch and able to adapt. So Steve coaches the under-15s the same way he coaches the under-20s, the same way that we're now coaching the first team. And so the best thing about that is you can adapt really quickly if everyone's on the same page. Mm-hmm. So you know, Steve coming in with limited preparation with those boys, it was kind of almost a little bit of a case of that consistency led to the performance being as good as it was probably on the day and has been in previous weeks of those younger lads as well. So that was really good from my point of view. And just being able to, you know, having the trust in the boys and having the trust in Steve to go and put in the performances that they did, I think it's a testament to where we've come to in terms of the academy space.
From the outside looking in, it appears that there's obviously a pathway for players to move forward towards the first team, but it's also there for coaches too. And it feels like there's actually a way for coaches to develop themselves as well. You two are both within that setup. Was that kind of the feeling that you have as well, that there is actually a pathway through the teams and within the structure?
Yeah, and I think it's a great thing for a club to produce their own players and produce their own coaches. And, you know, Greeny's been around at the club for a long time, and he's the best example. You know, like as a player, he was in the teams that made the playoffs and was quite successful in the team, and then obviously retiring and have different coaches that he worked with, Ricky and Ernie, and he's had interim, so he knows the club inside out, he knows the culture, he knows where we need to get back to, and he's also now got a really great understanding of all the youth setup because of his role in the academy. So that's a great example of somebody that the club has helped develop, and he's the coach he is and the person he is because of the opportunities and the pathway that he's taken at the club, and people relate to him because of that, and I think that's really important, you know. And people relate well to the players. Like, everyone's got excited about Sarpri, about Libby, because they're our players, they're homegrown, and there's that connection with the fans, there's that connection with the great football in public, because they're developed from within. And it's the same with coaches, you know. I think people are more likely to buy into those coaches because they're part of your system and they know your club, and you feel more connected to them than someone coming in that hasn't got that connection. So in an ideal world, if, as a club, if you can produce good enough players and coaches to fulfill your academy and your first team roles, then that's the optimum. You know, it's not always the case, but if you can do it, it's great, and it keeps that connection.
We had Jose on the pod last week. Obviously, if you put your other hat on, you've got the under-17s role as an assistant to Jose, or a partnership with Jose.
Yeah.
Is that exciting to do that again and work with Jose, who's obviously come on long leaps and bounds since the last time you worked with him at that level?
Oh, look, we obviously know each other for a long time. We go back a long way, so he's a good friend, and it's always good to work with people that you can relate to straight away, so we don't have that kind of building a coaching partnership. We've worked together for a long time. But, you know, from a personal point of view, seeing him do well like he's done with Team Wellington and the way that they're playing, he's really turned that. He's kept the success with Team Wellington that they had under Calcott in the last season, but totally changed the way they play. And the style is fantastic to watch. And as you saw in the final, they're now going toe-to-toe with Auckland City. And you could argue they're on a level pegging in terms of the way they play and the way they handle the ball. So he's done an amazing job. He's still young as well. And, you know, Wellington's becoming a bit of a hotbed for young players and young up-and-coming coaches, and that can only be a good thing for the Phoenix. You know, we've obviously got our own internal people, but if coaches like Jose do really well on a local scene with Team Wellington, like the young players at Team Wellington, if they do well, then hopefully there's pathways for them as well at the Phoenix.
Dave, you got any questions for these guys?
No.
I've covered everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, Steve, what's been your background before the Phoenix? Obviously, your accent suggests you're not from Wellington or New Zealand.
No, well spotted, yep.
Yes, I have an ear for it. What brought you to New Zealand, Wellington and the Phoenix?
Long story short, I came out at the end of my university days to play cricket, actually.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
And backwards and forwards between here in the UK doing that. Football was on the back burner for me at that stage. And I managed to meet my now wife, and the rest is history, really, to be honest with you. And I came out in 2010 for the last time, and basically got the ultimatum that if I disappeared from these shores again, I'd be a single man. So I made a rather shrewd decision and decided to stay. And
some would say the wise choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, pretty big commitment to obviously ship myself over to this country. But I think it's paid dividends for me in the long run. And I spent 6 years working at a little boys' school in the Wairarapa called Rathfield College that some of your listeners may have heard of.
Yep.
And kind of cut my teeth coaching there. And developed a team and my own philosophies from that, really. Able to make mistakes without any real comeuppance on my own issue. And then moved to Lower Hutt last year and coached Lower Hutt in the Central League. And managed to get an opportunity to work with Paul in the summer in the National Youth League, and yeah, here I am now 12 months later down the line. So looking forward to the future, enjoying the experience, and yeah, looking forward to what the future brings for sure.
So you're involved with United now at Central League level, or still Lower Hutt-ish? Tough question.
Yeah, sorry. Tough one at this stage. Yeah. I didn't
mean to touch on something there.
Yeah, no. So I coach Lower Hutt in the Central League for this season again. I'm really enjoying that, and yeah, looking forward to what the season brings for those guys. But obviously the potential for a slightly interesting future, depending on what the end of the season brings. Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
Sure.
So if United see any transfers to Lower Hutt, we know who to blame.
No comment.
Yes. I think what you touched on before, Patrick, about coaches and players, you know, for us, recruitment of good people is important as well. You know, we spend a hell of a lot of time and resource on trying to get the best young talent from around the country into the academy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same for coaches, you know. So if local coaches do well and impress people, then we'll take note and get them involved, you know. And I think seeing the work that Steve did with Raf Keel, and then how well Lower Hutt did last season after a similar situation to Jose, really, where they'd kind of changed the whole culture and the way they play, and Steve got them playing really good football and doing really well. And so from our point of view, you know, like if you've got a young coach doing well in the region, then it's important that they have that pathway for themselves, and we help and try and get them involved with what we're doing. So I think the message has got to be from the Phoenix point of view, if there's talent in Wellington, whether that's coaches, sports scientists, you know, the best physios, the best young players, like we want to try and get them into the organisation to improve what we've got. And I think that recruitment is really vital to the long-term success of what we're trying to do.
And does that just involve watching lots of football and watching teams that play against you and looking at tactical things and going, actually, it would be really good to get them involved, or is it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it probably started, like in Steve's case, it probably started last preseason.
We
played each other in the Hilton Petone Cup, Wellington United. I was taking that team and Steve was taking Lower Hutt. And, you know, you notice as a coach, like, okay, we were playing Lower Hutt and all of a sudden someone's doing something tactically extremely different to what we would normally play against, and made me think, made me change, made me do something different. And so you reflect on that and you think, oh, that's interesting. And then we had a chat after the game about the tactics, and it was clear that Steve knew his stuff. And then from there, it kind of like piqued your interest and kept an eye on how Lower Hutt were going, and when I went and watched them play and how they played tactically. So you kind of take on board all of this stuff. It's like watching a player. They do something that takes your eye, so then you go back for a second look and you kind of like build it from there, you know. So
it helped that we beat you, I think, halfway through the season in a rather entertaining 6-4 game.
Oh, was that that game, was it?
Yeah, it was that game.
All right.
Yeah.
I wasn't there, but I heard about it, and wish I had seen it.
You do lots of different things, and then for the National Youth League I needed some help, and then I thought, what a great chance to get Steve involved and see how he goes in the environment and see if we can work together. And we started our National League campaign with a 2-day roadie to Napier, and we shared a room, so we got to know each other straight away.
Very good.
It was cool. The marriage was made then.
Jumping in the deep end.
Similar. And I think you know, Paul and I didn't know each other that well, obviously, until the Napier trip, really. But
yeah,
I think Paul had done his research on me for sure, and I'd certainly done the same thing, and got a lot of mutual kind of acquaintances and friends. And I think it helped for me coming through the New Zealand pathway in terms of coach education, you know, coming through that system. And I know that Paul had worked a lot with Rob Sherman in the past, and I think he spoke to Rob on me just to get the lowdown of his opinion. And obviously the great man hopefully gave me a seal of approval. So for me, that's how the network begins, and I hopefully now we're starting to move that into younger coaches in the region as well through both our own networks.
I guess it's one of the good things about the New Zealand network versus the UK network or the European network, or even the Australian network, is that the football community is so tight-knit. And everyone really does know everybody, and you can build these relationships even on opposing teams, whereas otherwise it's just somebody from halfway across the country that you might not necessarily meet or things like that.
And their Wellington network's even tighter. I mean, you guys and others, you know, Jose as well, you know, there's different hats you're wearing, whereas sometimes you're working together, sometimes you're against each other, and, you know, it must be interesting changing between those roles of, you know, working together to bring a team, you know, up scratch, and then the next day you're actually opponents in Central League.
Sure. And I think, you know, in a previous life, in a coach education background, you know, I've spoke to Paul and got him in to speak to up and coming coaches about what we do every day in the Phoenix, and I think that's been beneficial for the local community to connect the Phoenix to the local clubs. And obviously we've used Jose in a similar vein as well, and it's certainly a lot closer knit network now than in my experience it's ever been, really.
It's for the benefit of everybody, really. There's no real point to segregating all the different clubs and all the different roles off from each other. Everybody learning from each other. I mean, I'm not part of this, but everyone learning from each other seems like a better way to work.
Yeah, we certainly think so. And I think when I first arrived in Wellington, one of the things I noticed about the academy was that there wasn't very many Wellington kids in it.
Yeah.
And there was, most of them had obviously come up from Christchurch with a move from APFA, but the recruitment was based around people from outside of the region. And one of the things that struck me was the first thing we've got to change is engage the local people in this, you know. So who are the best local kids that we don't have, and we need to go and get them? That's really important. And then who are the best local coaches, and can we get them involved? And then can we just network? So we've made a big effort over the last 18 months, really, to network with all coaches that are in this youth development space. So we talk, and we feel we have good relationships with those guys in the clubs that are working and putting a lot of effort into their youth programs. We get together regularly and talk. And yeah, there's days where you're in competition, like you say, Dave. Yeah. But then I think everyone's got a lot of mutual respect for each other around the Wellington region, and we're all trying hard, and ultimately we're all trying to achieve the same thing. Yeah, we might be totally cutting the cloth a little bit different, but I think there's enough respect for each other, and I think it's at the moment we're in a good space in Wellington where everyone is generally working together.
Yeah, and in some ways, even knowing each other so well, it probably gives you a different insight into how, when you do come up against each other, how you're going to play. You know, in many ways that might create some other innovation. Because you know each other so well, you're going to try something a little different, you know.
Try
and catch the other person unaware.
Yeah, totally. It does. And like I said, tactically, it's good for us because sometimes games aren't necessarily that tactical around Central League or in some of the youth grades and stuff. So if you do have an opponent that you know is going to challenge you, that only helps you develop as a coach. And generally, what we do is talk about it after, which I think is great. You know, like, why did you do that, and what was the reason for this, and oh, that's interesting. And then it makes you reflect and learn and get better. So it's a really good process, and I've found Wellington to be great in that respect. Auckland's quite segregated, and everyone's got their own little bubble and their own patch. It's quite territorial, whereas Wellington, that everyone's obviously trying to do the best in their own environments, but equally I think way more open. And
we found that at the 17 tournament, didn't we, when we went up. We were one of the only teams from outside the region there, and it was very territorial, and obviously it was good to come away with the trophy, but again also show the Auckland market what we've been doing. And that's a testament to the work that's gone on for the last two or three years with that group coming through. You know, those people that would have watched the game in the final would have seen the Phoenix style come out, and that didn't change from game one all the way through into the final. So
before we let you go, we'll talk about your respective Central League games from last weekend. Somewhat mixed. You, obviously, United had a 6-1 win.
Yep.
1-0 at the half, as I can see on the flashy new app. But and then Calvin Harris, I believe, scored 4 goals in this game.
He did, yeah.
Great way to start the season.
Yeah. Obviously, really positive performance to start the season. I think it helped us that, apart from Calvin, who is the only new addition to the team, everyone else has been playing National League pretty regularly.
Yeah.
So that obviously helps. They're still in reasonable fitness levels and form, so we didn't have a big pre-season build-up or anything, so it's good. But I think the key thing out of that was just the maturity levels of the players now. You know, that group has had, for most of them, their second Central League season. They've had one, sometimes two National League seasons. So, yeah, they're 16 years old, 17 years old, most of them. But they've still had 3 or 4 seasons of good level football under their belts now. And you can kind of see that maturity coming out. They're certainly not intimidated by Central League games, and they can put their best foot forward and showcase themselves in a good way. We've been waiting, and he's been a bit of a caged ball for 3.5 years, but finally he's allowed on the pitch. So it was awesome. His parents actually flew down from Hong Kong to watch the game.
Oh, wow, awesome.
It was on his debut, so it was real nice for him to be able to score goals in front of mum and dad and show people what he's about. Yeah.
And so Lower Hutt had a 2-2 draw, 4 back from 2-0 down by the looks of this.
Yeah, we did.
Against Western Suburbs, which is not an easy game, obviously.
No, it was obviously not an easy one to start the league with, but also a good one because, you know, Lower Hutt, historically, people don't give a lot of notice to, and there's not much expectation around what they're about. But Yeah, I think it was a good result for us. Obviously, fighting back from an early deficit was a real testament to the boys' character. And yeah, I'm pleased to say in our own little way, we had 12 Kiwis in our matchday squad and five making Central League debuts. So yeah, just a little plug to the other clubs out there trying to produce the Kiwi footballer, really. And yeah, a fair result in the end.
All right, well, thank you very much to both of you for joining us.
No problem.
We're going to move on and talk about Team Wellington for too long and Kiwis overseas, but I'll let you guys go home and see your kids and and all the jazz. Thank you very much for joining us. All the best for the last Phoenix games and Central League and everything else that you're doing. Looks like you all have many hats on, which is awesome to see. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, it's just Dave and I now.
It is.
So we're kind of...
I've run out of beer as well, so that's always a sad time.
Should we pause and get more beer?
No, it's all right. I'll survive. It's a weeknight. I don't need beer. And I'm sick as well, so I probably shouldn't really be drinking.
Yeah, it feels like we're going to record the other podcast now.
It really does, actually.
It's a bit weird. But we're not. We're going to talk about the Team Wellington.
I've also weirdly moved around, and I'm facing you directly, which makes this even stranger.
Just looking directly in each other's eyes.
T-dubs, though.
T-dubs against Auckland City.
That's what we're going to talk
about. Yeah, we've mentioned it earlier, but it was obviously a 1-0 win to Auckland City with a Callum McCowart goal in the 85th minute, sealing it for Auckland. Dave and I both travelled up for the game. If you want to hear the thoughts of us during the day, listen to our other podcast, but it's not football, really, so maybe don't. But the game itself, I thought, was an awesome game of football. Like,
it was.
If you put the result aside, which is obviously disappointing for us and disappointing for Wellington, it was a great battle on the football pitch between two very good teams.
Yeah, it really was. It was a very even contest, which I liked. And I think Temps was saying it before, how, you know, it kind of shows that in many ways Team Wellington are actually almost on equal pegging with them these days. You know, obviously Auckland City still come in the favourites and deservedly so, but there's no longer that gulf from Auckland City to the other teams in this league.
Mm.
And I think that just gets more and more apparent each year. And this final really was a battle between two quite even sides. I think if you look at the finals that Team Wellington have won, in many ways they've kind of done it on the counter and it's been a little lucky. This one felt like a very even battle between two sides.
There were periods of dominance of both teams. There were periods where T-Dubs had lots of possession and that kind of thing, and there were periods where Auckland definitely dominated the game, and it felt like that game was heading to extra time for a long time of it.
And I think if Team Wellington had taken it out, you wouldn't have been that surprised by it. I think that you would have said that was a deserved result.
Totally, either way, like, I can't begrudge Auckland the result because by the same token, they also deserve to win as well. So, both teams deserve to take that trophy home at the end of the day on that performance.
I haven't seen a replay, but it definitely felt like the goal itself almost came out of nothing. You know, there was a lot of build up play from Team Wellington kind of just before it, and it was almost on the counter. You know, not quite. There was a little bit of build up, but it definitely felt kind of out of nothing in the scheme of the game. It felt like this was heading to a nil all draw in extra time, which for you and me would have been interesting given the time of our flight.
It would have made things very interesting. We would have been playing for a very
when they scored, even though it did feel slightly out of nothing. It wasn't undeserved by any stretch. Yeah. It was you know, both teams were well in this and had their chances, and it just happened to be Auckland City that scored theirs.
I mean, yeah, absolutely, Team Wellington had the chances. There was a Ross Allen chance in the first half that was just offside by the looks of it. There was other chances where we broke forward. There was a chance where we had that free kick that was pretty late in the game, for the free kick quite central.
Yeah.
And I think Roy Kaiara ended up putting that straight at the goalkeeper. But it was there to be won by Team Wellington. I think what let them down was that the goal they conceded happened so late and there just wasn't enough time to hit back. If you look at the Oli game where they were 1-0 down against, I can't remember who it was, the first game in the Oli, they were 1-0 down for like 80 minutes of that game, scored an 85th minute equaliser and found their way back. There just wasn't any time for that to happen this time round.
No, and they still did throw everyone forward. I think it was 6 minutes left or something.
Totally,
like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they gave it a good go, and you still, for those 6 minutes, you believed a goal was possible. Yeah.
Yeah. But when it got to about 2 minutes to go and Auckland started to get a footing and Team Wellington went, well, this is probably it. It was it. And that's how it ended, 1-0.
And good final, well-deserved win to Auckland City. And congratulations to them. I think it's tough to have an unbiased view on this. You know, I'm a Team Wellington fan, so I walk away from it disappointed. But it was a good final, and they deserved winners.
Yeah. Full credit to all the Team Wellington lads who were obviously disappointed, but every single one of them came and shook the hands of the – it wasn't just the four of us that
– The four of us?
The Boxy and Tracy, it wasn't just the four of us who had kind of got together-ish, and it was other people who had turned up to support Team Wellington because they were in Auckland as well, and Tony, something like that, and the players came down and thanked everybody for coming along, and they were great. Like, that was really cool to see from a team that I like to call my football team alongside the Phoenix, but to see them thank the fans and everything about the way they conducted themselves on the day and grace and defeat was good to see. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, and despite the disappointment, there's a real, not even just an air, but, you know, them actually saying it of, well, we've lost that one, but Champions League is still to come. You know, they still know
this is an
Auckland City team they think are beatable. So if they come up against them in the Champions League, which, assuming the quarterfinals go the way you'd expect, that's not too far away. So they're really targeting that. They know this is an Auckland City team they can try and beat, and they're looking forward to facing them the next time in the Champions League.
And, yeah, that's... It's a bit strange because in some ways this game really didn't matter at all. It was the pinnacle of the New Zealand football season, but there's nothing riding on it really other than the trophy. I mean,
that's easy to say once you've lost it though, right?
It is easy to say once you've lost it, and I wouldn't have said the same thing last year, but I think last year as well the O-League is still the bigger trophy to win because you get Club World Cup qualification. That's obviously a big carrot.
Yep.
But so I was obviously disappointing to lose that last year in the way that we did. I think it was, what, 3 or 5-0 across the two leagues in the final?
Yeah, something like that.
It was a pretty damning result, and that was just really disappointing. But this year I don't think it's going to be that dominant. I mean, the teams will face each other in the semifinals, assuming things go well in the quarters for both of them, which is going to be a bit different. But in order to win the O-League, you have to be Auckland City at some point. So you may as well do that in the semi rather than the final, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether that takes anything kind of out of the final, depending on who makes it through that potential semi, whether that feels like they've kind of already played their final and go into it a little... I can't even think of the word.
It's not undercooked. But,
yeah, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A little bit overconfident, I guess.
Yeah. I think either way, whoever might win that potential semi-final has that problem. But obviously the quarterfinals are this weekend. Can you remember who Team Wellington are playing? I haven't looked it up on my phone.
Lay City, I think.
Lay City Dwellers, of course it is. This is 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, which is not great if you've got local football on, but I believe the Elite have a Wednesday night game this week?
We do. We have a Wednesday night game, but we are very short-staffed at the club rooms, foolishly have stuck up my hand to help, so I will be watching Central League instead.
Yeah, I'm injured,
and probably more likely not watching Central League. I'll be working the bar.
Yeah, which is disappointing. I'm injured, so cannot referee. Did a game on Monday, and my knee went, no. Ever listened to the other podcast will know that I basically fucked my knee completely doing a half marathon with minimal training. But so I've managed to get Saturday off as well, so I'll be down at Davy F, which is going to be fun. It is a bit frustrating it's not Sunday afternoon, but I guess with the international travel and that kind of thing, it makes sense for it to be Saturday for all the reasons. So,
do we think this will be getting live streamed?
I believe it will be, yeah. I think all the games
are. Hopefully by that, whatever the outfit we're watching out of the islands.
It's basically OFC TV using MyQG TV as the platform. Which
was excellent.
Way better than YouTube.
Hopefully that is a thing, and I'll be watching it from the Wellington United club rooms.
YouTube's great for live streaming, but this platform where you could skip back and forth through the game, jump to the key moments in the game, jump to the goals.
Not even necessarily just key moments, but any moment. Yeah, the fouls blow in or substitutions or anything it would let you click through to, which was fantastic.
It was awesome. It was awesome to see IFT doing that. I believe that is a thing, and it's available within New Zealand and outside of New Zealand. I think it's an international stream. They have the rights to their own league, and they use the rights everywhere and haven't made the mistake of selling it to Sky Sport to sit on. So, that'll be good to see. Auckland also play in their quarterfinal. Is it this weekend or the next weekend? I don't know when it is.
I think it's this weekend.
It must be this weekend. I think they're all this weekend because then it goes pretty soon into the semis.
I wonder if the Auckland one's on Sunday, though.
Maybe. I don't know.
Don't quote me on that. Look it up. Check the website.
Yeah. Don't listen to the two of us. We don't know. Let's jump into Kiwis Overseas. I have to read it this week because Cam is obviously away. But I'm going to do my best to not butcher this. So, I'll bring up the email from Jared from Optimize, who obviously bring us Kiwis Overseas every week.
Is that what they're called?
Optimize, they're called. I was doing two things at once and trying to open it up on my phone. Anyway, let's go. Chris Wood continued his goal-scoring streak since returning from injury, scoring Burnley second as they beat West Brom 2-1. He beat one defender before his shot was saved, but he was quickest to the follow-up. They're 3-from-3 since Wood's return and take on Watford on Sunday. Colorado Rapids picked up their first win of the season. Every time this comes up on the podcast. I think it's there because of Anthony Hudson, and I just forget that Tommy Smith and Declan Wynne are both there. I'm like, why are we doing this in Kiwis overseas? Not a Kiwi. All right, they had a 3-0 win over the Philadelphia Union.
He's American, isn't he?
He's American. Tommy Smith went close. Declan Wynne also put a strong performance, and he got on the team of the week. Colorado are away to FC Dallas on Sunday. Alec Collier retained his starting spot with Chicago Fire. They drew with Bill Tuolomas and Jake Gleason's Portland Timbers. They both got starts. It was 2-2 draw. Three Kiwis all played the 90 minutes. Chicago faced Columbus. Portland traveled to Orlando. Minnesota United went down to Atlanta, courtesy of a third-minute own goal. It's Michael Box's team. Atlanta played out the game with 10 men, but Minnesota couldn't score a goal. Minnesota have a bye this weekend. Vancouver Whitecaps got a 2-1 over the Crew. Marinovich had a quiet game. They're away to Real Salt Lake this weekend. And the Whitecaps have loaned Maya Bevan to Husqvarna FF in the Swedish third tier. That's the same team that Joel Stevens is at.
So there was actually a Husqvarna T-shirt in the crowd at the final, which was fantastic.
I believe it was one of the players' fathers wearing a Husqvarna. Yes. It wasn't Husqvarna FF. It was Husqvarna Chainsaws, but close enough. It was quite cool to see. And he was wearing it for Joel Stevens, which was really cool. Pek Zwolle had they ended their 6-game winning streak with a 2-0 win over Sparta Rotterdam. Ryan Thomas hit the crossbar but didn't score a goal. They up to 6th and take on Roda JC this weekend. Heerenveen have lifted up to 8th place, 1 place off a European playoff spot with a 2-1 win over Heracles. Marco didn't make it off the bench. They featured for the reserves on Wednesday as they went down 6-0 to Canberra Reserves in the Reserve League Cup final. He might see more first team minutes this weekend due to injuries. Greek football kicked off again after everything went down there. Panathinaikos faced Gianna, and Panathinaikos won that game 1-0. Themi played 90 minutes. Giannina were reduced to 10 men after 53 minutes and couldn't create any more chances. I'm not even going to try and pronounce who they played this weekend. Tyler Boyd played 90 as Tondola got a 1-1 win. They're playing Portimonense something. Stephen Old played 90 minutes for Morecambe in their 1-1 draw with Swindon, not Sweden. Morecambe have gotten 5 games undefeated. Nico Boxall's Viborg got a 2-1 win over Roskilde. And they saw off Skiv 1-0 early in the week with a 90th-minute winner. Title of the set played 90 minutes as Venamo began the campaign with a 2-1 loss to Gifle. And Jesse Edge's Achilles had a bad, not his actual Achilles, but his team, had a bad week. They were deducted 5 points due to financial difficulties at the club. They lost their first game of the week 4-0 to TEC, and they beat De Dyke 5-0 midweek. So rollercoaster round for them. They're 13 points adrift and almost assured of relegation. And Benjamin van den Broek had a slightly happier time as Conan Kildedyke. I should listen to Cam doing these, really, shouldn't I?
Yeah, probably.
At least the teams that they're playing for who get read out every week, but the away teams, they have no. Leenden, they went a 1-0 win, and van den Broek came on and played 25 minutes at the end and then played 90 minutes and a 0 draw at Excelsior. The woman, Aria Percival's good form continued. She captained to Basel to a win over Luzern. She scored the second goal of the game. I don't know what the score was. Jared, you didn't tell me the score for that one. It's okay. Rebecca Stott, Sky Blue FC, played their first match against ABX's North Carolina Courage. North Carolina won that with a 92nd-minute winner to make it 1-1. North Carolina played Washington, and Sky Blue host Seattle Reign. Katie Mom played 60 minutes as Utah Royals played out a goals draw with Houston Dash. Utah will play the Chicago Red Stars, with Rosie White remaining unavailable due to injury. Reading and Anna Green had a 3-0 win over Yeovil, and they got a surprise win against Manchester City. Anna Green played 90 against Yeovil, and then came in for the last 5 minutes against Reading after they got reduced to 10 men to see out the win. Olivia Chance came on the 70th minute as Everton drew with Sunderland. Amber Hearn and Michaela Moore started for Cologne as they got a 1-0 win over Hoffenheim. They're in a relegation spot, but are 44 goals worth off than 10th by Duisburg. CJ Botts, USV Gina, lost 1-0 to Essen in Botts' absence. Even further behind. It's not often that it's the player names that are hard to pronounce, but Jana Radosavljevic scored a brace as Kloppenburg.
Good Kiwi name, yep.
Kloppenburg beat Hensted Ellsberg 5-1 in midweek caption, and then got a 3-1 win over Heffador. So, yeah.
Heffador. Interesting.
Heffador. H-E-R-F-O-R-D-E-R. Anyway, that is Kiwis Overseas for this week, and that is the pod.
It is.
Made it through. We made it through.
thank you to Jared and Optivise.
That was good. We did well, given that we were down.
I wasn't here last week, but I want to give you credit for one thing that you did very well. Do you know what it's going to be?
I wrapped up the pod at the end properly.
You nailed your outro last
week. I nailed my outro.
You even slipped in an explanation of where I was, same flow. How many takes did that?
No, that was first time.
Phenomenal.
I usually put the surprise of the other guys in at the end when I've done it perfectly.
I don't remember hearing that. I just remember hearing a perfect outro and going, can't be a first take.
The pressure is on me tonight. But,
yep, so here you go.
Here we go. From Dave and myself, who are here recording the podcast, and from Frostingham, who will listen back to this afterwards, it's thank you for listening. And good night or good morning wherever you are. Thank you.
Bye.
Presuming that Steve Coleman coaches Wellington United brings you. Turning up late to a podcast when you've got guests on brings you.
My Comet brings you. Championes bring you.
No, fuck off. I've given Auckland City credit. That was hard for me. I'm not going that far.